what we're doing is still delivering on that message. And that will, there will come a tipping point where it begins to snowball. And our dream is to become a household name that, you know, yes, you people know your Airbnbs and your booking.coms, and they understand what those brands are and what they mean. But us as an operator, we want to become known as an operator, and that, you know, that's, it's a trusted holiday or a trusted business trip that you go with these guys and you expect a certain level of service and you get it. So I think we've got a lot of work to do internally, and as we build and grow out of this, we will need to push that message, both in what we do, but also through podcasts like this and other PR means to ensure that everyone is aware that there is a brand out there like us in the short-term rental space, and we're taking on quite a big challenge.
Welcome to Slick Talk, the hospitality podcast where we discuss all things hospitality, hotels, and business. You can find us online at slicktalkthepodcast.com and on every podcast listening platform.
This is the Vacation Rental Mastermind Series, The Operators Edition. In early 2020, I did the same series featuring the service providers in the vacation rental space. Now, after the year that we just had in 2020, I think it's time that we showcase those who have been really leading the charge and having the boots on the ground during this crazy pandemic. In this short series, we're going to focus on what makes a sustainable and profitable vacation rental management company and why it's so key to learn these tools, tactics, and of course, structures that make these companies the way they are. So sit back, grab your pen and paper, drink your coffee, and enjoy the Vacation Rental Mastermind Series, Operators Edition. All right, everybody, welcome back to Slick Talk, the Hospitality Podcast. This is an exciting episode. I don't think we've ever had we have had another whale on the show, but you're going to be the first one in 2020 and I think 2021 as well. So welcome to the show, Will. How are you doing, my friend? I'm excited to have you on and talk about what you guys do with Altito.
Delighted to be on the show, and honored that I am the only Will so far of 2021, and always a pleasure to speak with another Will. Looking forward to sharing some of the highs and lows, probably a few more lows, as you can imagine, over the last year or so, with you and your listeners.
Of course. Well, just to give the audience a little bit of a background, you're obviously being featured on the Vacation Rental Mastermind Series, the Operators Edition, and you and I connected through a conference that I was kind of moderating for, and you and Andreas and Michael Golden were the panelists, but we were part of host earlier or later last of 2020. And so after hearing a lot about what you guys have been doing with Altito and just kind of your origin and the overall just steps you guys have taken during this crazy wild pandemic, I just felt like it was natural to get you on the show. So I'm really excited and glad that we had that opportunity to connect first. So I'm pumped, and I just want to go into, let's dive in about you. What's your origin? What's your background, and how'd you get into the industry?
Yeah, well, it slightly unconventional route into the industry, but I sort of feel like that's possibly the case for most people in hospitality. So maybe it's conventional to be unconventional in hospitality. But I was, if we go right back, I was a theology graduate at university. So I'm not sure how much so
can
that...
Can I ask for what theology?
All and every theology. It was a broad church, being in the UK, I guess it was looking at Christianity and philosophy around that, but you could be more diverse than that.
That's pretty funny, because I went to Bible college as well for about like a quarter, and then I dropped out. So,
right. Okay. Well, I managed the whole 3 years, but I was going to say I wasn't a particularly good student. So I think at times they probably would have preferred it if I had dropped out, and certainly gave me hints. But yeah, so that was about 10 years ago. And then came out of that into relatively normal, conventional sort of graduate jobs in London, in sectors like finance and strategy consulting. So fairly straightforward, quite boring, really. And that's probably why I only did that for 3 years as well. And then things began to get a bit more interesting, a bit more unconventional. And I teamed up with an old friend called Tom Archer, who is a key part of the Altido story. But we were childhood friends, and we were both feeling similarly disillusioned with that, you know, having done school, university is like, oh, is this it? Is this what life looks like now?
This is all I had to look forward to.
A lot of money poured in and not much coming out, and seemingly this is where we're going for the foreseeable. We obviously took the next logical step for us, which was to set up an apple juice business, which is for any would-be hospitality entrepreneurs. This is a key step on the road to making it in hospitality. So if you haven't set up some sort of juicing business, that would be a key takeaway. And we did that for probably too long, really. I think it was sort of... from incarnation, from when I first squashed my first apple, which was not long after leaving university, to formalizing it into a business with Tom a few years later, and then it was probably 5 years of the juice business, which, although I joke about it, what it did give us was live experience of running a business, albeit a very different one to the one we run now, and all the challenges that come with that. During that, oddly, or during the end of that, we were both living in London, and we thought, well, this, you know, the juice thing is good and it's fun and it's profitable and everything, but not quite sure this is going to be the one for us, business wise. And so we started getting into property. The London property market was very hot back then, 2014. I mean, it's usually hot, but it was particularly hot then. And we did a residential development together. So we financed and bought and refurbed a property. And then we tried to sell it just as the market went cold. So we went from juice to sort of slightly suspect house refurbing. And then we had this asset on our hands, which we couldn't sell. And we're wondering what we'd do with it. We didn't want to long let it. And then Airbnb was getting quite popular back then. And we were hearing of, you know, companies starting up around this space. And we thought, yeah, maybe we should short let this unit and see what we can do. And we did. And it did very well. And we met some celebrities out of it. For the US fans, I mean, I actually didn't know who this guy was then. I now know who he is, and I see him regularly on my BBC Sport app. But a man named Steph Curry and his family were one of our guests. Yeah, so I think if you have any interest in basketball, he's got a big name. But he came to stay, and that was quite exciting. But we then thought, let's make a there might be something in this. There could be an interesting business in this. And so we put the word out amongst our network, and we had one or two owners contact us saying that, yeah, they had some short let needs. And we said, told them that's what we did. And we stuck them on Airbnb, and we did, you know, we got hold of some linen, and we did the cleaning ourselves, and we checked in the guests ourselves, and we started making money. And quite quickly, we realized we can make more money out of this than juice. So Juice HQ got shut down, and a business called, at that stage, the London Residence Club was born, which was kind of like a high-end short let property management company in London. And we were growing very well, and it was very exciting for any anyone who's been through that sort of entrepreneurial journey, those from ideation phase into sort of execution of a real business, it's pretty thrilling. It's very challenging at times, but it was good. And that's how, yeah, that was really the turning point of the last five or six years for me and Tom, and we've been in hospitality ever since. So you're probably wondering, well, why am I running a business now called Altido and not the London Residence Club? And that is because another key turning point happened a couple of years ago when we merged our business with three other businesses. So it was a four-way merger, which I believe is quite an unusual thing to do in any industry. And it was a European merger. So just as the UK was leaving Europe, we were going into Europe, and we merged with a Portuguese, Italian, and a Scottish business to create a consolidated structure and a new brand called Altido. Which stands for A Life That I Dream Of. And I'm not sure people always remember that, but we're very keen to push that, because that's a key part of what we're doing at Altido. It's part of our vision, which is to fulfill every traveler's dreams. We have very small visions at Altido. that's what we've been doing for the last 2 years. Obviously a bit tricky in the last year, but it's been certainly an interesting journey. And I've enjoyed every minute of it.
Well, I was going to say, I got a couple questions. I'm writing down as you're talking. I'm like, okay, I got to make sure I pinpoint some of this down. So the juice business, was it actually called Juice HQ?
No.
That's such a clever name if it is.
Yeah, maybe we'd still be in the juice business if it was called Juice HQ. No, Juice HQ was essentially my parents' home. And that was another key reason why the business failed, because my parents were highly unamused about all the this juice that was being produced in their garden, essentially. But it was called Archer and Parry after the founders, me and Tom. Awesome. So, we did that for a few years.
Well, so what I guess my biggest question would be, from the juice business carrying over into the London Residence Club, now Altido, what was the biggest learning that you guys learned from the juice business and carried in?
One of the biggest changes we saw, which was why we thought the business model on the short let side was what one of the really appealing bits of the short let side relative to the juice business, was how the flow of money worked, because both businesses are very operationally challenging. So I think, you know, we went from learning how to manufacture apple juice and pasteurize it and bottle it and label it, which at scale is not easy, and juice goes everywhere quite regularly. But at least it prepared us for hospitality, where again, at scale, you've got all sorts of operational challenges. But one of the things I remember we noticed really early on, and particularly Tom noticed, was when we were selling juice, we were often chasing invoices. So we'd created X thousand bottles, and we were shifting that during the season, which is only 3 months. So we were shifting a few thousand a month. And then we needed, obviously, to get this money. And quite often, it didn't come for quite a long time, just because, laziness, or we couldn't, cash flow issues, or whatever it was, the client just was like, oh, I'll get around to paying it at some point, despite the fact our payment terms are probably a week. The great thing about the short let industry is the money flows through our bank account. And so we were able to take our fee every month. And we suddenly saw that we had a cash flow positive business from day one. So we didn't invest anything really in terms of the startup costs of our property management business, whereas our juice business required quite a lot of capex for all the kit. And then even when you were set up, you were, often chasing invoices, which was quite tiring. So certainly, yeah, I felt like that comparison was an interesting learning for us.
That's very true. And cash flow, I can't imagine with chasing down hundreds of invoices and not getting paid for months and having to fund it yourself. It's wild ride. But I Indeed. Also have another question, which is your first property. So the one that you guys developed, do you Yes. guys still have that under your umbrella, or did that eventually sell as time has gone on with that? And then I have one more question about the merger, but I kind of am curious about this first property of
yours. Sure. Yeah, it's good question. It did. It did eventually sell. And the whole purpose of that project was to, we actually lived in it for 9 months, which was amazing. That's another top tip. Live in a property that's going to be refurbed, because you can have amazing parties and it doesn't matter what happens to it, because everything's going to be redecorated. I remember waking up at 8 a.m. once, there's these very loud banging, and I came down to find Tom with literally a sledgehammer taking down a wall in the garden. And that's the sort of thing that would go on in that place. Not the neighbors weren't particularly amused. But we always planned, we had to sell it. It was part of the financial investment there. It just meant that there was a delay of basically a year. But the short let solution helped us out there. I would love to still have that property on our books, because it was one of our best. But sadly no longer.
Well, I was going to say, with that, that's probably shown a lot of, I don't know, just with the financial, so the sell and then having short rental income leading up to that, did that help with the completion of the sell for you guys, for the evaluation of the property or anything, saying that this is a cash positive property, or was it mostly just a real estate type purchase?
I think it could have. It was, you know, certainly when we were doing viewings and drumming up interest for the property, it was clear that that was, you know, what we're doing. And I think for someone, depending on the buyer, if you were buying it as a sort of pied a terre, that's an interesting factor to think, okay, well, I can stay here as my bolt hole in London and rent it when I'm not there. And hopefully they would have used us to do it. But in the end, the owner, he was a director at Apple, I think. And so he wasn't that interested in the extra short let income. But it's a good point. I think generally speaking of the market at that time, this was becoming more and more common, and estate agents were looking to this, to companies like us in a way they hadn't before. Previously, they kept short let agencies at arm's length because they were kind of like the new kid on the block. They didn't really know how it worked. They weren't sure if they'd want to get involved. But suddenly they were like, wait a minute, these guys can help us maintain this property on the market by getting some, you know, the owner won't mind leaving it on market for a longer time because they're getting a bit of income. And as you say, it could be a selling point for the future buyer.
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of that in the States, where vacation rental homes or properties are generating X amount of income per year. And when they go to sell on the real estate market, they actually incorporate that as, this was a vacation rental for 5 years or 3 years. This is the amount of money it made, let's say $1 million per year, which is quite a lot. But if you have $1 million cash flow positive business, and then also the real estate asset itself, they're actually leveraging that to increase the buying power or the selling power of it. And so I just thought that was kind of interesting, and maybe something that would have happened when you guys were doing your property. But I was going to ask for the merger. So when you have a four-way merger like that, and you said Italy, Scotland, and
Portugal. And then us in London.
Okay. So were you guys at all competition with each other and then realized, hey, we're better together? Or what was the overall like light bulb moment leading up to everyone saying, we want to create this one brand?
Yeah. We were never directly competition. I think the closest we would have come to it was nearing it was probably in the UK, because you're basically in the same country. You've got the Scots had their business in Edinburgh, we were down in London, and it's kind of an obvious next move for them to come down to London or for us to go up to Edinburgh. So although we weren't directly competing, it probably wasn't that far off. In terms of a light bulb moment, there were a few milestones along the journey, but I think just the nature of any merger, even a simpler one, just a two-way merger, is it's never an overnight decision. There's it's so complex and there's so much that goes into it, and it's such a big change that for everyone as individuals and as business owners, there's a lot you've got to get your head around mentally before you actually do it. And when, you know, we were talking about this much more generally in 2018, not just with the four companies who merged, but with, you know, at conferences, just having conversations about consolidation. Like, it was a bit of a hot topic, because I think for a lot of people, they'd been in the industry for 3 or 4 years, they'd set up a good business in a particular city. But then it was like, well, what next? Do I, you know, raise money and enter a new market on my own, which some companies had done and are doing, but seemingly not hugely successfully? So is there a sort of another way of doing this? And that's where the merger question came up. And so I think there were, you know, there's potential other partners who could have joined this journey. And indeed, I remember speaking to some of them at the time. But it was just, I think as time goes on and the more and more serious it's becoming, and you start looking at, you know, drawing up legals, you then realize who's really serious about this or not. And it just kind of naturally happened that the four companies that merged to form Altido were the ones who were really up for this and got that this is going to be a fundamental change in our business lives.
Well, not even just your business lives, but in the regions that you guys are managing. So now the collection of inventory has grown times four, basically, if you think about the
exactly
amount of inventory that everyone had. At the beginning, this is kind of a side off question, and we'll get into a little bit more about the brand and the name, but how many units did you guys have when you started the merger?
Yeah, so it was wasn't exactly equal from company to company, and indeed, although we were all in the short let market, the models were slightly different in each region. But it was probably a ballpark of around 1,500 units when we came together as a merged entity.
Wow, that's a lot more than I was expecting. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Just to your point, it's a very good one. Overnight, you become a totally different proposition to both guests and owners, because you are a multinational business, and you can service them in ways that you couldn't before.
Yeah. I know we can go into deeper details, like how it was to consolidate everything into a PMS and all the other stuff like that. But I think that'll
all
be
the sexy,
like,
stuff.
Yeah, I would say we'll probably need to do like a part two for that episode.
Yeah.
But I want to know, so do you think the meaning of the brand behind the company, so Altido, because I loved when you talked about this on host, that like not many people know our definition of Altido. It's a life that I
dream of.
Yeah,
there we go. Case in point.
Yes. Yeah. And so like when I heard that during the host conference, I was like, oh snap, that's actually really cool. Like in the beginning, Altido was like, okay, that's an interesting name. Never heard of anything like it, but didn't know there was an actual definition. And so do you think that has some kind of significance to the role for the company's success, especially during COVID? Like a life I worth dream of is something that you guys are holding on to.
Yeah. So I do, but I think we've got so much more potential to tap into there, and that indeed, you know, we're looking ahead at the post-COVID world and how we position ourselves and how we grow over the next 5 years, and that you know, it was in our DNA when we created this brand to create something which is a bit different, which is, you know, very clearly reaching out to the guests side of things, very clearly making a statement that we want to be a world-class hospitality operator offering a best-in-class service. And so we've kind of put our money where our mouth is with the name of, you know, trying a life that I dream of, but try and in our mission statement to try and fulfill travelers' dreams. And why I think that's powerful is, although we're probably still a bit under the radar, and probably a lot of people just know us as Altido, I think what we're doing is still delivering on that message, and there will come a tipping point where it begins to snowball. And our dream is to become a household name that, you know, yes, people know your Airbnbs and your booking.coms, and they understand what those brands are and what they mean, but us as an operator, we want to become known as an operator, and that, you know, that it's a trusted holiday or a trusted business trip that you go with these guys and you expect a certain level of service and you get it. So I think we've got a lot of work to do internally, and as we build and grow out of this, we will need to push that message, both in what we do, but also through podcasts like this and other PR means to ensure that everyone is aware that there is a brand out there like us in the short-term rental space, and we're taking on quite a big challenge.
Yeah, and I was gonna say, I knew of you guys prior to the host conference. I just never knew all the story behind it, which is really cool to discover. Just recently discovering that, you know, four different entities coming together, a life that I dream of, is something that, you know, I'm a geek on the experience side and brand for sure. And so, finding a story to tell through that is really cool. And I think that's when it got me more of a fan. Like in the beginning, it was like, oh damn, that's really something that can be played with and used for a lot of good reasons. Obviously we're in hospitality, so you had me at that first moment. So
good. That's good to hear. Customer feedback. Yeah. And you haven't even stayed with us yet.
I know, not yet. Once the borders open up though, I have so many trips, I'm pretty sure like you as well, planned for this year, or you know, 2020 and even 2021. That have been postponed, but once those borders open up and life is good, guarantee we'll probably be having a beer or two at a couple of properties.
For sure.
Yes. Well, I want to go into, because you said something really specific, because the theme for our session at Host was, you know, what have you learned? What is 2020, or what has the COVID-19 pandemic taught you? What are the things that you've done in order to keep afloat during this time? And you talked about, it was interesting to see Andreas from Miami talk about, they were acquire, build, buy. And then you guys were like, no, we're going to narrow it down. We're going to thin out. We're going to empty out the closet. We're going to trim the fat, and we're going to just really run at a small, like not a smaller operation, but just kind of cut back and see what was not needed and what was really needed to operate. So do you think that is something that has helped you guys continue to move forward, or what was the idea and thinking behind that? And you could probably describe it better than I did, but just the overall
process. I mean, I think you described it pretty well, actually. I mean, we were doing that obviously in response to the pandemic, but I think it's important to say we're still doing that, as you know, pretty much we all know, despite vaccine globally, Q1 of this year at least is still very tough. And you know, businesses have to make very tough strategic decisions about how to cope with this. And I think what would help to give you a bit of an insight and give the audience a bit of an insight is we set quarterly goals for the entire company. And we announce them each quarter and we review them. And they're usually only three or four, something that we can really hang our hat on that we all want to aim for, and whatever our particular role is. And we set our personal goals and we try and align them with the company quarterly goals. And two of those goals this month are very clearly linked to what's been going on with the pandemic. And they are back to basics and one company, not four. And so if we just dig down into those two a bit, you can see kind of our response to how we've approached the pandemic. So back to basics was just looking internally. You know, pre-pandemic, it was all very exciting. The market was moving very fast. It was all about growing and going around to conferences and making partnerships and connections. As soon as the pandemic hit, we shut all that off, and it was just about looking internally about, okay, what's actually going on in our business, and anything that we'd been papering over before, because it was the good times and you can afford to do that, you just can't afford to do now. And so back to basics was thinking, well, you know, we're espousing that we're a world-class hospitality provider, but let's really look at this and make sure that we are keeping those standards and that those standards can scale. And so that's from things like, how does our check-in process work? How is our cleaning operation set up? How is our communication to the guests in terms of the booking flow? And so it's really helpful to focus the entire company on that aim. And one of the things we wanted to do was get people out, no matter where, what you were doing in the business, is to do a check-in yourself. So to actually get out there and meet the guests and to clean a property yourself. So you get out there and understand what's actually involved. So we were doing that a lot end of last year, and we're doing that this year as well. And then the one company, not four, as it kind of clues in the name, is just, I think, in the excitement of the merger and the growth and everything else, is, and you kind of alluded to this in terms of like PMS and merging and things like that, is that despite the fact we were a merged entity, our regional elements maintained legacy issues or legacy processes and just a unique character. And that's fine if you're running, if you are a separate entity, but if you're a merged business, that doesn't make sense. And so one thing we've been pushing really hard during this pandemic time is actually, you know, we've got to standardize, we've got to make efficiencies. We need to run things on the same processes, do things in the same way, get teams talking to each other more. So those are the kind of things we've been doing looking internally just to improve the fundamentals of our business. And definitely, I think that's as we come out of this, that's bound to be a plus.
No, for sure. And I was glad that you brought that in, because it's interesting to think of operations. And when you're talking about, you know, back to the basics, one of the basics for, I think, at global scale, the way you guys are, would be to figure out how your system internally is, whether you're, you know, running off of four different standards and four different systems and four different, all these other things. It can be quite hectic and probably quite costly at the end of the day, when you have just so many different things going on with different entities. So I guess that like really leads into this kind of the question I had for you was, what are the key values or pillars that you think make a sustainable property management company or business? Because you, I think, definitely could say back to the basics is a key one. I preach that on the podcast all the time, whether it's a restaurant, a vacation rental, or a hotel. It's like, we have to remember our basics. Then the moment we forget that, that's when things start to get a little off. But when we do remind ourselves on the basics, then it kind of comes back to, and it's like, oh, it was right there in front of us the whole time type deal. So I'm kind of curious on your thoughts.
Yeah, well, I think this perhaps sounds obvious, but I'm fairly sure, having witnessed some other life cycles of some of the other companies in our space, that it isn't necessarily obvious to everyone, is that if you're looking to make a sustainable business and you're trying to work out, well, what are the key values or pillars, you have to have key values and pillars to get there. And I sort of feel like when I see some companies that lost their way and perhaps have gone bust or just seem to be a bit stagnant, is I wonder what are their key values and pillars, and what are their drivers? What are they actually trying to achieve? Because quite often it looks, and particularly with the really well-funded companies, that their only goal is just to grow, but to no end. And it doesn't really matter what that growth looks like. It's just about bringing on as many units as possible. And often that means a high churn rate and not being profitable as a business. And, you know, that's might be fine if that's in line with your vision and your goals, but I sort of feel like they end up looking a bit lost. So for us, we've been really clear with our brand values internally and with our mission statement of, you know, we're here to fulfill every traveler's dream. So that's not necessarily mean we're going to be the biggest, but we do want to be the best at what we do, and we do want, and we, when we make a promise, we want to deliver on it. And we have some core values within the company as well, which is, we've got four core values, which is stay humble, be pioneering, trust, and putting people first. And they work very well internally as a company, but also with our with our service offering to guests and our service offering to owners. So I feel like having these foundations and pillars set up within the business at least gives you a chance of success. You still have to execute on it. And then making it clear to everyone in the business that, you know, we're trying, our effort is to build sustainable growth. We're not a funded company. We are, we're here to create a profitable, cash flow positive business. So that matters. The type of growth that we take on really matters, and the way in which we run it matters. So we have to operate it properly and take on the right kind of inventory. If we do all that, or have a sustainable, profitable business.
I love that you said that. And you even mentioned a couple key points that I think, I can't say the big managers like yourself or a few others in the States or whatever forget, but I think when, you know, I've been recently like on Clubhouse or a few of these other social media platforms where you're seeing these people that are trying to scale, whether it's like with one property, two properties, you know, they're trying to get more properties under their belt. And you said something very specific. We remember the guest. I think the guest is always kind of like the spotlight, fundamental key player. But then you've also said the owners, how you service the owners, how you provide value to them and that stakeholder that they play. And so I think that's really key as well, because the moment you forget about the owners, that is kind of like, it's like Expedia saying, well, these are all hotels, but it's like, no, we own the hotel, we're your inventory, you should be helping us. And it's kind of like the owner saying the same thing, I'm giving you inventory, so you better make sure you're providing value for me. And so just the fact that you keep constantly reminding, I've heard you say a couple of times throughout the episode that, you know, guests, you always put the guests first, but then I'm hearing you say, and our owners. So it's really cool, a key thing, I think, from my experiences running properties and in the management game. But yeah, I'm just glad that you brought those points up.
I think it's key. The key part of your question was sustainable. And if you don't look after your owners, you don't have a sustainable business, because they will leave you. And I think, you know, it seems kind of obvious, but a lot of people get that wrong. And we, you know, I'm sure we've got it wrong at times. Definitely, we're not perfect by any means, but a pandemic helps to put that in the spotlight. And we monitor our churn very closely, and we report our churn figures internally on a monthly basis. And we report why they left us. And we try to make sure that, okay, well, they have left us, but let's make sure that doesn't happen again elsewhere.
Agreed. No, that's awesome. And so I wanted to get, you kind of mentioned a little bit in that last question, but in the long term, what role do you see Altitto playing in the travel and hospitality industry? You know, once, let's say past 2022, maybe 2023, let's say COVID's kind of a thing of the past, people are traveling, life's good. Hopefully, knock on wood. But what do you see the long game for you guys?
Yeah. Yeah, it's particularly after the year we've had, it's important to remember that there is a long game, and that there is, you know, this isn't the normal, and we're going to get back to what we do best, which is running a business and growing it and doing something hopefully that is adding value to the industry and adding value to all our consumers. So I come back to our vision. Our vision, as I said earlier, is to fulfill every traveler's dreams. And so when we look internally about at the competitive landscape and what we're doing and what others are doing, we often ask ourselves the question, what's our USP? You know, we're a business, we should have a USP, but what is it? And it's a really difficult one, I think, for anyone in our industry to answer in a sort of quick and easy way, because the barriers to entry to our industry are pretty low, and scaling is difficult for sure, but the barriers to entry are low. So how do you actually differentiate yourself and stand out in what is inevitably a very crowded market? And every time we answer that question and we wrestle with it, we always come back to the same thing, which is our service level, is our customer service, it's our reviews. And that that applies again both to the owners and the guest side. But I think when we're looking forward in terms of our overall vision and what the impact we want to play, I mean, initially it will be European, but we want to be global, is that we become a leading hospitality operator within that space. The inventory that we manage may become more and more diverse. We've started managing hotels, so we're not just a short let operator, but the principles remain the same, and that is to offer the kind of service that delivers what we call, and I'm sure many other business call, the wow factor, where a guest comes, an element or hopefully a number of elements of their journey booking with us and staying with us made them think, well, that was different. Like that was, they went above and beyond. They went the extra mile. They, you know, when I called them up and I needed it, they came and delivered that hairdryer with a smile and a box of chocolates or whatever it is. But, you know, that that edge, which begins to define you, is actually a property management company with a brand rather than just a functional operator. So that's what we're going for at the moment. It's obviously a massive challenge at scale, but we think it's really important to stay true to that. And we're excited to deliver on that over the next 5 years.
Yeah, when I was working with Marriott, it was the phrase of pleasantly unexpected. So that, and then our friend, I'm pretty sure you know who Matt Landau is, but he calls them the limited edition moments or limited edition theory, where creating moments like that, like you said, the wow factor, those are limited edition. You can't find that anywhere else because you guys went out the way to create that special, unique limited edition series.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, it's a cool theory, and it goes off of the Destination Air one that I created in 2020. But same thing, people are wired to create remarkable experiences that are anticipated mm-hmm. and shared. So I think at the end of the day, we all have different names for the same purpose and same definition. So it's pretty exciting. We had a pre-chat for this recording, and we're talking about some news that was coming up with you guys. And so you recently taken the CEO position of Altido. And so yep. What is your I guess final thoughts for not only the episode, but your thoughts leading forward as kind of the I guess I don't know what you call it, the pillar above the four brands, the four entities that are becoming one. What's your goal as taking on this new role?
Good and big question to finish on. Well, I mean, personally, it's very exciting, but obviously it's exciting because it's challenging. And I think anyone who's an entrepreneur wants to be challenged. You're always looking for the next thing and looking to, you know, where you go next. But it's also an honor and a responsibility to lead our colleagues and friends in what's been a very challenging time, and hopefully lead them well. And you know, right now more than ever, it's not easy for people out there, and in our industry it's particularly hard. So anything I can do to help boost morale and get people to focus on the light at the end of the tunnel, which is coming, I think that's really, really important. But I feel like although we are in the middle of creating our five-year business plan and where we want to go, and that's really important to have that long-term view, and we just discussed a bit of that about, you know, becoming a household name in this space that guests will, you know, when they start thinking about their holiday or their business trip, they go to Altido first because they want the full experience. That is, you know, if I could play any part in delivering that and achieving, you know, moving the business towards that place, that would feel like a great success. But right now, my focus is on this year, because of just the context of what's happened last year. And I'm internally, as I'm sure my colleagues would tell you, I'm very bullish on the prospects for later this year. I feel like we've had such a tough time. There's a very governments are very cautious, the media is very cautious right now, and rightly so for all sorts of reasons. But I believe Q2, Q3 is when we bounce back, and internally we call it 2021, the year of the comeback. So that's my focus for the moment, and that's what I'm going to be trying to deliver on the next year. And in terms of any shameless plugs, well, it seems obvious, but I would love people to come and stay with Altido, try us out. And if you don't like it or you do like it, give me that feedback directly. Reach out to me, reach out to the team. We really want to hear it. That's how we learn. But we've got some really exciting properties in lots of really exciting destinations. And we've got more coming on this year. So whatever your holiday needs are, pick up the phone, send us an email, book online. We want to hear from you.
Perfect. No, I love that. And I was going to say, I'm going to plug everything into the show notes. So everyone who just wants to have an easy, simple click of a button, that's going to be right there for him. So Will, I just want to say thank you again for joining me on the series, joining me on the show, providing value in what you guys are doing. I'm excited to see, I'm hoping you're right, man. I'm hoping in Q2, Q3, even Q4 that you guys and everybody in the industry just starts thriving again and seeing the revenge travel happen. I think we're all excited for that. So once that, like I said, once that border opens, you will see me at one of your properties and I will be knocking at your door saying, you need to come have a beer with me and we need to talk more.
I look forward to that.
Off the recording though.
Yes, yes, very much off the record.
Yeah, awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining. Slick Talkers, you've now heard it. Go to Altido, they have the website in the show notes and you can find out more from there. Thank you guys for tuning in to the Vacation Rental Mastermind Series, the Operators Edition.
Thank you so much for listening. We love your support and want to provide the best we can to all our listeners. So please find us online, social media, and on Spotify, Apple Podcast, and Google Podcast.
Hey everybody, I don't mean to break away from the episode, but hear me out really quick. Let's talk about dynamic pricing. Recently, I did an in-depth demo with Andrew Kitchell, the CEO and founder of Wheelhouse. Now I'm going to tell you what a great product and tool for property managers to use, since now is a time that we all know that you cannot leave money on the table. As the short-term rental segment of hospitality gets more advanced, revenue management and dynamic pricing will help you and your team keep your eye on the prize while maintaining excellent service. Now if you're a property manager of any size, go ahead and check them out and let them know that Will sent you. Or you can just click the link below and you will be pleasantly surprised. Now, back to the show.